Hey, uplifters. I want to take a minute to talk about something personal to me. In my 40s, I started noticing my hair was shedding more. So a couple of months ago, I started using Nutrafol. I'm already seeing so much less shedding. And my teenage daughter, who notices absolutely everything, keeps commenting on how thick my hair looks. As someone who's built my career around rigorous science, I super love that Nutrafol was the first brand to clinically study hair thinning on menopausal women, which is why I am so proud to have them as a sponsor. Nutrafol takes a whole body approach to hair health, supporting you throughout your life stages. You can see thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code UPLIFTERS.
One of my really good friends, Candace, because she puts like the multi and multifaceted, and she is an advocate for artists and herself and her friends, her family, her child and her children to come, her husband. Like, I just watch her do so many things. And also bring so many forward. She brings my name up in ways that I didn't even imagine. She brings me up in rooms I'm not in all the time. And she does it without needing any recognition. Sometimes I don't even know. She genuinely believes in me.
Welcome to the Uplifters Podcast, where every week I get the bonkers awesome privilege of talking to an inspiring woman who is doing big, brave things in the world. This week, I am talking to somebody who really embodies everything that this show is about. Courage, transition, change, embracing our obstacles and using them as leverage into our dream making. Today, you're going to meet Candace Thompson-Zachary. She was nominated for the show by Charisma J, who you met on an earlier episode, who is also wildly inspiring and wonderful, and with whom I formed just the most beautiful friendship after meeting her on the podcast. And so it's extra special to get to talk to the woman who inspires her. Candace has spent her career really nurturing artists, building organizations, I think mostly nonprofits, and creating platforms that amplify underrepresented voices, specifically in dance, but also in many other creative categories. We're going to talk to Candace about her big career pivot that she recently made, leaving in some ways, but probably also, I'm guessing, carrying with her 20 years of investment and learning and teaching in the dance world to launch a coaching and consulting practice specifically designed for women in menopause and second half of life. As somebody whose life was deeply influenced by my grandmother, I'm so moved that she named her practice after her grandmother, Merle. And after being the executive director of Dance NYC, founder of the Dance Caribbean Collective, she has now built a new chapter. My goal in this, for all of us, is to really understand her mindset through that shift. The thoughts, actions that she employed in order to keep herself moving and motivated and build some momentum. And what's still tricky? Because I think we all need to hear that just as importantly. So Candace, thank you so much for taking time out of everything that you're doing to hang out with us, share a little bit about your journey to help us do bigger, braver things in our own lives too.
Thank you. And for that amazing introduction, I so appreciate it.
You make it so easy. You've been busy in this lifetime.
Totally. I have been.
So you've had a really rich career in dance and arts advocacy. What was driving you and giving you energy in those 20 years in arts?
What I would say was driving me was a curiosity about how the arts ecosystem worked in New York City. Mm-hmm. This is my 20th year in New York. And so I moved here 20 years ago to go to Adelphi University to do my BFA in dance, right? So the US was new, New York was new, Long Island was new, a BFA was new. So there was a lot of figuring out how things work, what the rules were, where the opportunities were, what were the unsaid practices or norms of a space. And then once I graduated, like every other dance graduate or most of them, you're looking for work. You're like, where can I be nurtured? Where can I find opportunity? And so that 20 years is really my journey through the arts ecosystem also, because it started with me as a student, like a pre-professional, and ended with me as the co-executive director at this dance service organization that I helped to run. And so it's also an evolution of the different roles that I played in the ecosystem. And I think it's also what strengthened my leadership at the organization, because I had played so many roles. I had been the dancer who was in a company. I had been the dancer who had done freelance gigs. I had been the dancer who had 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 jobs to be able to pursue a life where she could take contract dance work. I had been an arts administrator on the side for independent choreographers, and then for friends, and then in festival management. So I had played a lot of roles, and then I founded my own thing. And then I had to figure out how to get funding, how to attract people to the mission, how to get people to volunteer, how to put on a 3-day festival on $20,000. So I did that.
Amazing.
That section of my journey was really wanting to bring people in community who shared cultural heritage background and get them all together in front of art that spoke to them, that was made directly for them. And then going into the work in arts advocacy, more specifically, it really was about how do all of the systems work? Why is it so hard? Like, can I figure out what are the levers that people are pulling? What are the barriers that they're running into? Why is it so hard to get your work up on a stage? Why is it so hard to get funding for what you're doing? Why is it so hard to earn a living wage for what we do? And so really, I would say the most important driver was just curiosity, trying to figure it out, trying to peel back each layer, and then how to play a role in making things a bit different, a bit better.
I love that. I think for a lot of us, our careers are evolutions, and we can look back and see them and be like, all that illogical stuff actually sort of makes sense. But as we're going through those changes, we feel a lot of fear about our readiness, our credibility, our capability. And so we tend to go one of two ways. We either focus on, oh my gosh, here's all the things I haven't done, all the things I don't know, or we focus on, and I heard you do this already a little bit, here's all the things I did that are actually making me uniquely well-positioned to do the next thing. Do you notice either or both of those tendencies strongly in yourself?
Yes. And this is actually one of the things that I've reflected on at 40, is I reflect on the moments where I made a different choice because I felt like a certain path would take too long, would be too daunting, would take too much effort, right? Like, I reflect on those moments. Because at 40, your sense of time is different, right? 3 years, that's nothing. But at 30, 3 years feels like, oh my God, like going into the void, right? And so I have reflected on those small moments where I've chosen X instead of Y because of feeling daunted by how much something would take or that I wasn't ready for something. I would say, however, that my curiosity also most times overrode that tendency. Not every time, but most times, because I was so determined to figure things out. So, and I can see it kind of allowed me to bypass some of the plateaus that I could have hit had I just been like, oh, this is too hard, it's too daunting, I could never, kind of thing. I think two things also helped to shift me out of that. And I've heard it in other people's stories, which is one, becoming a mom, right? It's kind of like the kid is staring at you in the face. They're like, listen, we got to make this work. I'm hungry. Where's the food? Where am I going to school? Who's going to take care of me? So like you have this, again, like to your point earlier, this increase in responsibility that forces you into a new level of confidence that If you don't have it, you find it. You walk it until it becomes real, because you just have to. So I'd say that's one. And then two, just like with anything with time, you just realize, oh, right, I'm 37. Wait, I have career pivoted, right? Like, I went from being a freelance dancer to being a studio manager. Oh, I did pivot. I went from being mostly a personal trainer to doing more arts administrator work. Oh, I have pivoted. So you kind of start to see your ability to overcome things and to deal with change differently, so that when those moments come up of doubt, like, you have evidence to back up you moving forward. I'll also say that I think the thing about how to think about time really helps you in terms of, especially at 40, what's next? Because time doesn't feel so large and gargantuan, right? So if you're embarking on something that is going to take 5 years to build, it's just 5 years. So it changes, to me at least, it changes what readiness feels like, because you have 5 years to get it done. If you're not ready, you'll get ready. You'll be ready in 5 years. Doing anything for 5 years, you're going to get better at it.
That's so true. And the time is going to pass anyway.
Yeah.
So you might as well be doing what you want to do with it instead of just staying in what you've been doing because it's a comfortable seat at a comfortable table.
Or you're afraid of what might happen, or you're afraid of, if people see you falling on your face, what will happen? You know what I mean? Like, there's so many fears that kind of keep us stuck in where we are and prevent us from moving to where we want to be. But time does help put those into better perspective.
I love that. And by time here specifically, you mean age,
yes.
Like number of
years
living. Right. There is research that was done recently that says that women's growth mindset actually peaks in our 40s. Mm. And I think we have walked around believing that everything is going to start fading, because we've heard about brain fog and we've heard about all of these hormonal changes that happen. But actually, we become better learners, better experimenters and explorers. And that curious learner mindset actually starts to kind of explode during this chapter if we allow spaces for ourselves to get curious about things we're actually interested in. And so you just turned 40 as you are entering this new chapter and making this pretty significant pivot from what would seem on the outside a more certain, maybe comes with insurance, you know your schedule, you know where your paycheck is going to come from, career, to this big, wide open view. What was scary for you? And what did you say to yourself? What did you do? What support did you lean on to help you either wade in or jump in head first?
Lots of different things. Where do we begin? I did work with a career coach.
Smart.
Just to understand, like, what would it mean to look at new career opportunities, new career options, what the market is like now, to just help me navigate 2025. Two, I leaned really heavily into learning. In the last 2 years, I've gotten like 6 new certifications. Like,
wow.
Oh, yeah. I became a certified wellness coach through NASM, the National Academy of Sports Medicine. I became a menopause coach in that time and did some continuing ed on hormonal health. I got certified as an associate HR professional. I became a Clifton Strengths coach. I became a breath coach. So I really leaned into learning.
Oh my gosh.
And one thing kind of leads you to the next thing. It's like you get one layer and then I'm like, this layer has opened up this horizon. Now I want to go in this direction. And so I kind of kept doing that as time went on, right? As my building blocks towards what could be next. I also leaned on my small community of friends and family. They were with me. They were there, like, motivating me. And also they were the people who, when I was like, can I really do this? What's happening? They were like, yes, you can.
Yeah.
You've done more with less. Yes, you can.
And yay you for asking that question. Just to pause there for one quick moment, because I think we have this tendency to keep those doubts inside, hoping that they will become less real the more quietly we say them to ourselves, but then we repeat them so many thousands of times that they become deeply real. But by saying that, you let the people who know you and love you be like, are you freaking kidding me, Candace? Yes, you can do anything. And that helped you probably shift that conversation with yourself.
Yeah, saying them out loud. Yeah, because then you reduce mm-hmm. their power.
Yes.
Yeah. They're yes. real.
Let them out in the yep. open. Let's see if they're true.
Totally. The other thing I would say is that I hedged my bets, right? Like, for instance, I'm building this consulting practice bit by bit, but I'm also looking for another job. So I'm likely going to work another full-time job for a few years with skills that I already have or ones that I'm continuing to develop as the on-ramp, right? So there's that, right? There's also, I think the other big like sense of insurance I had was my network.
Yeah.
I was like, there's so many people that I'm in relationship with. There's so many people that I've supported. I'm like, work will find me. I truly believe that. Work will find me. And so that was also the other insurance. I'm like, there's so many people who know and have worked with me and know what I'm capable of. They will be my advocates.
Mm, love that. Another thing that I think we have a tendency to do is to downplay our resources, to say like, I don't have enough money. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough energy. I'm too tired to do this. And instead, what I hear you doing, which I think is a massive mind shift, is inventorying the resources you do have available to you. Because I'm sure you did not have an infinite amount of money or an infinite amount of time or an infinite amount of energy, but you looked at, okay, what do I have and how do I invest that to give myself that confidence?
Yeah, correct. Correct.
You talk about all these different certifications that you gained and it feels like it was really energizing to you and activating to you. For a lot of people, I also see the opposite happening, which is I need one more certification before I can get started. And it becomes a bit of a delay tactic, a way of postponing, taking risk, or being brave and stepping into what we want. Because if we step in, there's a chance that we might be rejected. We might be unsuccessful. What made it feel safe enough to take action?
One of the coaches I was working with really kind of helped me get past that first barrier. When I started, I like relaunched my wellness coaching at the top of 24. She was just like, you need to just get started. You need to just start. She's like, it doesn't matter. Just get started. Even if you feel like there's more information that you need, you have 100 times more information than the person who needs you. Just get started.
That's great advice.
And then two, I have a good friend who is like my perennial beta tester. So anything I want to try, I was like, hey, you want to be my guinea pig, my test client? She's like, absolutely, sign me up.
I love her.
Right? So, yeah. You know, it's like, I just started putting things in practice, And the other thing I think that was like, especially to get off that first lift off, I think those two things were really key. What then happens with time is you start to develop a yearning for the work it takes to get to where you want to be. It could feel daunting, all the study that you have to do for the certifications or as you serve your clients. But you develop, at least this is what it was for me. I developed a yearning for the preparation for my client sessions. I developed a yearning for the reading and the study that I had to do for certifications because I knew how it would apply to how I would be able to serve my clients. And so that feedback loop kind of starts to get strengthened, but you do have to your point, you do have to get started in some fashion and not use the study as a delay tactic.
And it's there is where you start to understand the connective tissue as well, right? So I'm sure in one area of study, as you embarked on the next, you were like, oh, that's what that meant in that other thing I was looking at. Or that's how strengths and breath work together.
Totally.
And if we're just sitting around thinking in theory, I think it can feel like activity. And there's actually research that's shown that our brains, when we spend a lot of time thinking about things, that delay tactic actually tricks our brains into thinking we've done the things and feeling the exhaustion of having done them.
Yeah, I think I've read that. I've read that. Though I feel like some people use that as evidence that you shouldn't do things like visualize where you want to be or visualize success. Do you know what I mean? I feel like I've heard people use that research study or that finding as a
interesting
means to also not develop a sense of the future or develop hope for the future. So I just wanted to put that in there.
That's fascinating. I would never have put those together, but I totally see it now that you say it. And I just have so much evidence in my own life and my own work that getting really clear about what we want is extremely energizing and extremely activating. And it's like, I don't know, how am I going to get from here to Australia without a map? Like, if I don't know I'm going to Australia, I'm probably going to end up on the other side of the planet. We end up saving an enormous amount of energy by knowing where we want to go. Yeah, I think it's more about the belaboring.
Yeah, correct.
And analysis paralysis and the hazards of perfectionism that wear us out. Whereas visioning energizes us and actually replaces energy that is depleted by worrying. I think, though, you actually are demonstrating another way of doing that that is incredibly powerful, which is you were talking about developing yearning. Mm-hmm. And what a delicious word that is, number one. And what a delicious image it is to think that when we go out and do things, we can figure out what we might or might not fall in love with. And it's like, instead of treating this as I have to go into my career change or my new exploration, knowing everything about what I love and what I don't and what I want to design it for, instead of sort of imagining that, I'm going to go live it and discover what's true for me and then design for what's true for me.
Yeah. No, that's
really powerful.
Yeah. The yearning piece I found is it really takes to your point, it takes a lot of the exhaustion out of the work. It makes it seem more daunting just because the yearning gives you energy. And for people who are taking this in, I know that sounds like some woo-woo stuff. Like, what do you mean? And like, if you're in a burnt out, exhausted state, you can't even imagine what that feels like. But it is possible. It is possible.
But probably not if we're just sitting around thinking about it.
Yeah.
I think we have to go and experience.
Yeah. It's the
feel.
It's the balance of doing and building mastery and learning from failing in some areas and continuing to get clear on what that vision is that you have for yourself and figuring out how, to your point about like this perfectionism and how that like really depletes us, figuring out how to lower that voice, that perfectionist voice. And again, like by doing, you automatically lower it because you have evidence.
Yes. Just like you had evidence as you made this shift of all the things you were capable of, all the things you've been able to figure out without all the data to be able to walk into this chapter and say, no, I don't have all the data. I've never had all the data. No one's ever had all the data. And walk in and say, but I'm going to figure it out. And I know that I can.
Yep. The other thing I might mention is also that, you know, before I transitioned into working at the nonprofit full time, I was a professional freelancer. I had all the jobs. And so the other insurance that I had was that if none of this works out, I could go back to hustling. Like that is always available. I believe in my ability to hustle. So I think that's the other thing. I was not afraid of my own hard work.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a huge advantage that all of us really have available to us in the second half of life. Is that we have seen some things We have done some things and we know that we can figure things out. Like if we have survived to this point, again, we have a wide body of evidence that we will figure it out, that there is not just a single road, but that we constantly have choices available to us. You just turned 40, as you mentioned, and I think there are a lot of belief systems out there about what we're capable of in the second half of our lives. And so I'm curious for you how you would describe your belief system about the second half of your life in the first half of your life and what it looks like now.
That's funny. When I got into my first dance company right out of college, there was a woman in the company who was 30. I was 23, I think, when I graduated. And to me, she was old. Not like old in a bad way, but I'm like, oh my God, she's 30 and she's still dancing. Like that blew my mind because I don't know what happened. Like in my mind, I had this sense that like I'll dance till I'm like 28, 29, and then, you know, I'll get married and have a kid and be regular. Now, I was doing nothing to like further that actual dream. But like in my mind, there was some kind of cutoff at 28. Something else would happen. There was a void. So there's that as like my perception of what old was. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, I'm 40 and I'm still dancing. And I'm like, I laugh at me remembering that because it's like so ridiculous. But I think coming from the culture I come from and the family I come from, eldership is also revered, right? Like our grandmothers were everything in our lives. So I don't think I ever necessarily had a fear of growing old. It's more that I just couldn't see it yet because you're so young. Mm-hmm. You're just like, that's like something that will happen like eons from now. But I will say as I got later in my 30s, and like I started to go gray. I mean, I got my first gray hair, I think it was like 25. My sister's also like, why don't you dye your hair? I'm like, why would I? I earned these gray hair. I want people to see that I have some age on me. They should respect that. Mm-hmm. So please know how old I am.
I actually really love that. And I was thinking about that very thing this morning because there is so much talk about like women should hide their age. And maybe it was because I was raised by my grandmother and my great grandmother, my great grandmother were all very present in my life growing up. And they were all amazing and inspiring and adventurous and brave. And I always thought being older was the goal. Right. So, you know, that like 13-year-old thing that you feel you're just like, I can't wait to grow up vibe. I never lost that. I never was like, okay, now let's get younger. Because I just thought it gave me more authority to be myself, more authority to like be trusted and credible if I got older. And I kind of hear an echo of that in your gray hairs.
Yeah. Just like, I earned these things.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I know some things.
How I think about it now is more just like, one, about back to this thing about time. Uh-huh. I am in a hurry, in a sense, uh-huh. Right? I'm just like, I have things to do. Like, we got to get this moving. Even though I'm also willing to take the time, but I also, it does start to put, things become more finite in terms of getting to where I want to be. But then it also feels like, how I'm envisioning it right now is like, I have a pretty steep hill to climb. And at some point, I'm going to enjoy the plateau for a bit. Mm-hmm. And then I'll figure out what's next. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's how I see it. And I also feel, you do feel this, or at least I feel this really deep sense of groundedness. You feel your age. It's not that I don't. And, you know, perimenopause is a whole other story. But you also do feel this sense of calm because you have a much clearer or deeper relationship with yourself. Like you're not afraid of yourself anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a beautiful way of saying it. And so as I'm listening to you, I'm trying to sort of synthesize what I'm hearing in your story as the advantages of doing big, brave things as we age. And one of them, of course, is that growth mindset that we talked about. Another is a stronger sense of self. What else would you say are the advantages?
Yeah.
I guess I should add evidence for sure, right?
I think the stronger sense of self really then enables so many other things. Because it means you can't be shaken as easily, right? Your confidence isn't less threatened by people challenging you, people throwing obstacles in your way, people doubting you. Like, those things no longer take up so much space or have so much weight anymore. Like, you put them in their correct perspective. So it gives you a sense of, yeah, there's life on the other side of a conflict. There's life on the other side of a challenge. Like, you know that you're not going to like dissolve just because you are running into a really tough situation. So I would say that's one of the benefits. The other benefit, I think, again, that goes along with this like stronger sense of self is a diminished sense of self-consciousness around how people perceive you, right? Like, you just, you know, you don't care what people think. You know, that's that, like, that kind of, you know, people make jokes around that, around like women over 40. You don't give, you have no more F's to give.
Right.
Which means that.
Do you believe that?
That you have no more F's to give?
Yeah.
Partially. Yeah. Partially.
Yeah.
I think you put things in their correct perspectives. So you do have F's. Uh-huh. You do have them. But you just give them out sparingly. And when you do.
Not everybody.
When you do, it's a message. Enough. It's a signal. It's like, that touched a nerve. What does that nerve say about me? What's the value that's being crossed?
Well said.
So, yeah, it's like your self-consciousness is lowered. So it means that you try new things. Transition. It meant presenting myself differently to my community, which felt very vulnerable, right? Like, what would people say? Oh, who does she think she is? I felt it got to a point where I felt I was doing my community, my network, my people around me a disservice by not showing them all of me. I wasn't giving them good information to base their interactions with me on.
Their perception. They weren't receiving the whole picture.
Correct.
Yeah. When did you think you would feel like an adult?
Like, at 23, the mark was 28. And then in my late 20s, I think the mark was like 35. And then after 35, I stopped.
So roughly every 5 years.
After 35, I stopped trying to. It's like, we're out here. There is no age. We're just all figuring it out forever.
I think that's right. That's my feeling too. Like, expecting ourselves to have all the answers or be done growing is super limiting. And what a waste of a life to limit ourselves in that way. So for the folks who are listening who maybe think they want to make a big change and be seen differently in the world and do different things in the world, but whether they're in their 40s or 50s or 60s or 70s are sitting around thinking it's too late, what would you want them to know?
Number one, it's never too late. It's never too late to make a decision that is in alignment with your true self. Sure, maybe if you wanted to be an Olympian and you're 75, maybe that's not an option for you anymore, but maybe there's another Olympics you could join. I don't know. So yes, being older does make certain things less realistic, but the essence of the thing is probably still within reach. So for instance, if you're like, oh my God, I always really wanted to be a singer and you're like 65, what's to stop you from going to an open mic? Maybe you're not putting out Grammy award winning albums, but could you sing at the community fair? Probably.
Yeah. And you're certainly a lot closer to that Grammy by singing than sitting around thinking about singing.
Correct.
You're building a creative community around singing. You're learning about singing, right?
And then maybe by performing at the community fair and the open mic, you realize that actually I don't care about the Grammy. What I really care about is being in community with people who see me in my true essence. Mm. Maybe you actually realize that what you like is the songwriting part of singing and not the actual delivery. You know what I mean? There's also like what you learn on the journey to the thing that you think you want versus the thing.
Right. It's that idea of getting in there and discovering the yearning.
Yeah. Yes.
What is the feeling you most yearn for in your work now that you have been so many places and tried so many things?
Two things come to mind. One is that moment where I read something that illuminates another piece of information that I found somewhere else. Where like all the pieces just kind of whoosh, come together. And I'm like, oh.
You are such a learner.
No, seriously. It's like ridiculous. It's really ridiculous. It is deep. So there's that. Like that's my battery. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is to see it in other people, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And so when I coach my clients and they have a discovery about something that they didn't consider before, or their eyes light up with possibility because they're like, right now I have the key to unlock what's been blocking me. Right? Like that moment when their eyes light up is what is the other yearning that I have. Mm-hmm. And so it makes the things that I have to do to prepare for that easier.
Yeah. And I think there's so much power naming those yearnings.
Yep.
This has been so beautiful, Candace. I'm so grateful that we got to talk and to see where your journey takes you next. At 40, there are so many chapters ahead. And I suspect we're going to talk again in 10 years and be like, wow, who knew that that step would take you to this place?
Yep.
So who inspires you, Candace?
My friend, Sydney Mosley, who is my New York bestie and also a dancer, choreographer, consummate artist in the world. I danced with her company for a number of years in her building phase. And it's also one of the places where I rehearsed my leadership because at some point I was the associate director. And she inspires me just because of how clear she is on her vision and how disciplined she is with her vision and how clear she is about what she's saying no to stay true to that vision.
We have so much to learn from her.
Oh, yes.
All of us. That is in so many ways the hardest part. What do we say no to in order to say yes to what we want more of? So as uplifters, Candace, we live to uplift other uplifters. So how can we best support you and your work?
Thank you so much for that offer. You can support me by finding me on Instagram, CanDanceCreates.
Which is so cute. It really stuck in my head. Now I actually had trouble calling you Candace because I wanted to call you CanDance.
I know. It came about because so people would often mix them up. They would just call me CanDance. So I was like, might as well keep it.
Why not?
So you can follow me on Instagram where I share a lot of my thoughts on leadership, on wellness, on the work that I do running programs and nonprofits. And you can also sign up to talk to me to think about working together if you have big wellness goals that you want to bring into your life. I am specifically interested in working with leaders, artists, and creatives. And the way I'm thinking about it now is really as executive wellness because it's for people who need to be able to perform at a high level, but it's also executive in the sense of all encompassing, right? Because it's about how to incorporate movement, how to incorporate somatic and breath work, how to incorporate nutrition and lifestyle changes, how to incorporate a positive mindset. So looking at the full gamut of the person to help them build a sustainable life and lifestyle that gives them the wellness that they want to experience. And that also includes things like your social habits and how you work in communities. So it's like this total well-being approach to wellness. So I would love to work with you if you're interested in any of that. And then the other way is through strengths-based coaching for leaders, artists, and creatives. So it's how do you tap into the strengths that you have to build your leadership skills? And I feel like artists are leaders because they have to lead a vision and bring it into the world and work with collaborators and work with performers. So that is a form of leadership that's often under-considered. And also leaders who work in organizations, really helping them to clarify like what their leadership approach is and build a lifestyle also that supports them to be the best leader that they can be.
Mm, yes. And those are so interconnected, aren't they?
It is. And then the menopause aspect is within any of that, right? Because one of the aspects that we have to tend to is our hormonal health. And I feel like that is often overlooked in other wellness programs. And sure, some of the typical lifestyle change habits do help, but you really do have to know how to address those for people experiencing perimenopause and menopause. So I'm glad that I have that information to share with people at this point in their lives.
Absolutely. Yes. And that understanding gives you such an advantage as you help people diagnose underlying issues and tackle what's really driving the obstacles that they're facing.
Yeah, totally.
Well, I'm so glad we met. I can't wait to see you somewhere in Brooklyn soon. I hope you'll join us next year at Uplifters Live in March. We'll celebrate our birthdays together.
Hey.
Hey, and Women's History Month. Thank you for listening to the Uplifters podcast. If you're getting a boost from these episodes, please share them with the Uplifters in your life and then join us in conversation over at theuplifterspodcast.com. Head over to Spotify, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast and like, follow, and rate our show. It'll really help us connect with more Uplifters and it'll ensure you never miss one of these beautiful stories. Mwah! Big love.
Painted water sunshine with rosemary and thyme. Dwelling up perplexing, though you find it vexing. Toss a star and hover, be your own best lover. Relish in a new prime, plant a tree in springtime. Dance with idle hindsight, bring the sun to twilight. Lift you up, whoa. Lift you up, whoa. Lift you up, whoa. Lift you up. Lift you up, whoa. Whoa, lift you up. Whoa, lift you up.
Beautiful.
I cried.
That little thing you did with your voice.
Right, in the pre-chorus, right?
I was like...
Mommy, stop crying. You're disturbing the peace.